I'll be introducing myself in the beginning, so let's just begin. My name is Erik Schnettern. I'm a staff scientist here at Perimeter. I'm research technologies group lead. The idea behind that is that research these days isn't just done with a blackboard and piece of paper anymore, but one uses technology. For example, computers, laptops, computational physics, software. Everybody uses email and LaTeX and so on. And what I'm doing at Perimeter is I collaborate with many of the other researchers on computational or numerical methods. This week here, I'm going to give an introduction to Mathematica and to computational physics. And Mathematica is probably a tool that most of you will be using here at Perimeter and later in your career. And my own background in research is in astrophysics, relativistic astrophysics. I use computational physics to model supernova explosions, black hole systems, neutron stars. That is, of course, it's just one tiny part of physics. Theoretical physics is much larger, and that's most likely disconnected to whatever you're doing. But the computational methods that one uses to model these systems, they are kind of ubiquitous. Independent of what field of physics you're in, there's going to be some computation involved, either in analyzing experiments, if you're doing that, or in doing symbolic manipulations, where it's sometimes useful to use a computer algebra package, because that may be able to solve equations that are just tedious to solve manually. What I want to do today is give an introduction to Mathematica. I don't know whether you're familiar with its software, but most researchers here at Perimeter use Mathematica. I'll just give you an introduction to help you get started, help you get used to it, and you'll probably continue to use it during this year and also during your essays in the end. And the other days, tomorrow I'll give kind of a show and tell of the more advanced features of Mathematica, and also give a lecture on an introduction to actual numerical methods to help solve equations that may be impossible to solve numerically. And I will also be introducing, probably on Friday, the computational systems available at Perimeter if you need a bit more computing power, if you need to solve systems with Mathematica that you can't solve on your laptops, or if you want to go into numerical methods at some point. So I don't intend this to be a lecture where I just tell you something and you take notes, because Mathematica has a beautiful help system and there are many tutorials available on the web. I rather want to just give a brief overview over what is available in Mathematica, and then you know it's out there. You may not remember exactly how it's done, but you can just look it up. And the most important thing is for you to know what is out there and not exactly remember how it's done. So I want this to be interactive, and instead of preparing slides, I have opened a Mathematica window, and I'm going to type something in there and just give you a demonstration of what's going on. And the more questions you ask, the better. So let me just type something. That is what I'm going to do today. And you can format this. That is the title, and also can write my name down here. Great. And that is the first feature of Mathematica that you see. You can use it something like a Word, a text processing system. You can type in text, and the text can be nicely formatted. That's a title and a subtitle and everything. But what you mostly do with Mathematica is you type in an equation, and the system gives you an answer. For example, most people start with 1 plus 1. That's too simple. You should like to start with 2 plus 3. And the result is 5. Can you all read this, even in the back? Is it a bit too small? OK, very good. Now, who of you knows Mathematica and has used Mathematica before? I don't want to spend time with trivialities. That's almost everybody. And the others, are you unfamiliar with Mathematica or just lazy to raise your hands? You haven't used it? OK. So I'll give in the first 10, 15 minutes an introduction of the basics of Mathematica. And I would recommend that you just open Mathematica yourself on your laptop, and then you can follow along as I type. Do you all have your laptops with you? Or maybe two of you can look at the same laptop? No one complains. So the first thing you do is when you enter something in Mathematica, then you have to press Shift and Return in order to get an answer. If you just type something, for example, x plus 1, and just hit Enter, nothing happens, because it just goes down, like allows you to enter multiple lines of text in a text processing system. But if you hit Shift Return, then Mathematica evaluates the expression. Now, you can write something like 2 plus 3. Of course, that is rather boring. You can also perform calculations with fractions, for example, 1/2 plus 3/2. That, of course, is 2. Square root of 4 is 2. Square root of 2 remains the square root of 2, because that can't be evaluated any further without becoming inexact. You can use variables in Mathematica. I just typed 1. You can, for example, write x squared plus x minus 1. That can't be simplified. But if you have x plus 1 times x minus 1, it's an expression like this. And then you can simplify this expression if you want. That would be simplify. And the expression up here gets x squared minus 1. You will notice one thing about the syntax of Mathematica. When you enter a function, for example, sine or square root, then it's important that you write it with an uppercase letter, SQRT, of 4, and use square brackets for the function arguments. That's different from the syntax that we use when you write something on a blackboard. If you write sine, then you use a lowercase s and use round parentheses. The difference here has to do with software engineering. That's something that sometimes may get into way of physics. If you want to define functions yourself, you can just use function names that begin with a lowercase letter, and then all Mathematica's functions begin with an uppercase letter, and then there is never a confusion about whether you're using one of your only functions or a function that is defined by Mathematica. And since Mathematica offers thousands or maybe tens of thousands of functions, you could accidentally be using or overwriting one of Mathematica's functions. Same with the square brackets. That means there is no ambiguity between calling a function and just grouping elements. You can use variables. For example, you can assign a value to x. You say x equals 5. And then if you write x plus 1, of course, the answer is 6. Rather easy. And you can also assign a new value, x equals 12, x minus 3. That is also rather easy. And with that syntax, x equals dot, you remove the value, and then x is just x again. It doesn't have a value assigned to it anymore. This is going too fast. I mean, the beginning may be a bit boring to those of you who know Mathematica already. But those of you who don't know, this is too fast, too slow.
Good. Where is this window open? I don't even know.
Okay. Very good. On your laptop, you should have Mathematica installed. And can you maybe ask your neighbor to do that?
I have Mathematica, but where do I open it? I don't mean the window, but where are you doing this?
Okay. Very good. Yes. What I'm typing here, that is called a Mathematica notebook. And it is called a notebook because you would write down a series of equations, or calculations, beginning with some definitions, and ask Mathematica to solve an equations. You can add comments and text in between. And then you can save it in the end. And it is even possible to take a notebook and publish it on the web. And are you familiar with PDF, the portable document format? When you write LaTeX, then you produce a PDF in the end, then that's kind of, you can print it, you can look at it on the screen everywhere. And Mathematica, the company Wolfram, offers something that is called a CDF, a computable document format. And while Mathematica itself costs money, the reader that interprets the computable document format is available for free. You can download it. And in a computable document format, you can take a notebook and make it available for others. Others can look at the notebook. You cannot actually interact with the notebook anymore. But if there's a plot or anything else in the notebook, then you can still zoom in and modify the plot. And there's some restricted kind of interaction that you can program that is possible. And if you publish a research paper, then so the idea of Wolfram, the company that makes Mathematica, then you can publish it as a computable document format. And then the reader is not restricted to look at exactly what you put in a PDF, but can actually reformat and change it and say zoom into a graph or modify the way a graph is constructed. And that gives you more freedom than what is, for example, available in HTML or on the web. It hasn't really caught on, but when if you want to prepare a tutorial, for example, for classes, and you have this kind of interaction, then a computable document format may be a good idea. I'm mentioning this because that is something that is currently kind of a hot topic in publishing. You probably know that printing some things on pieces of paper and printing journals and books on paper is going out of fashion. Everything should be electronic now because it's easier to disseminate. It saves money. It's easier to store thousands of books in a laptop than carrying the papers around. But once it's electronic, it's kind of a shame if all the documents have a fixed format as in a PDF. You want things to be more interactive. And the computable document format is one way to extend that. I'm not saying that this is a good idea, but if you're interested in these kind of things, you can look at Mathematica's computable document format. It should be rather easy to take a notebook and transform it. You go to File and then CDF Export. You probably can't read that on the screen. I'm sorry, the screen may be a bit too small. But there should be a rather easy way to take a Mathematica notebook and export it. Now, before I show you more details of Mathematica, there's also a beautiful built-in help systems. If you want help about something, of course, you can also go to the Help button and Documentation Center, the menu item here. You can also use the question mark and then type a command, for example, help on square root. Opens a little box that gives a bit of information about square root. If you click these arrows, then a window pops up describing more and more about the square root. Okay. Now I just realize the way this appears on the screen, I'm using Mathematica 9. It may look different if you're using Mathematica 8 on your laptop. What version of Mathematica do you have installed? Mathematica 9, very good, it's the same thing. The nice thing about Mathematica 9 is it has this predictive user interface. If you type a command, then it suggests something nice. For example, if you want to have a 10th prime number, that would be prime, and then you see the box popping up at the bottom. Yeah, I don't know. You can read the prim, but you can't actually read the box on my screen. I can read that. But if you type this yourself, you should be able to read that. And the 10th prime number is 29. Or the thousandth prime number is 7,919. Where was I? Okay, yes. Variables and so on. You can not only write expressions, evaluate expressions, you can also solve equations. For example, x squared plus 1 equals 0, and solve for x. And the result, two solutions, is plus I and minus I. The equal sign here is actually two equal signs. If you write a single equal sign, that makes an assignment that defines a variable, and two equal signs is a comparison operator. You can take a limit, 1 over n, n goes to infinity, is 0, as expected. Good. This is the basic syntax of Mathematica. I didn't want to define it in a computer science way. Just give a brief overview. I guess that's all of that. So let's define functions. You also want to define functions, and this is where Mathematica deviates a bit from other languages, from, for example, Fortran or Python or Java that you're familiar with. In Mathematica, you use pattern matching. Patterns to define functions. Let's define a function f that just is the sine function. This looks about like this, x. Yeah, let's write it like this. You know, when you define a function, use the square bracket again. X is the function argument in the Mathematica's language. X is actually not a number or a variable. X is a pattern, and all patterns are indicated by underscores in Mathematica. And that means this function accepts one pattern, and the pattern is called x. And the function is then sine of x. And then, of course, you can just evaluate x. F of 0 is 0, and f of 2 pi is, of course, 0 again. Pardon? You can use either equals or colon equals. I was going to talk about the difference between in a minute. Is that, was that your question?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of surprised. I thought most of the time I tried to do that, I got error messages.
Okay, yes. So when you define something, you can either define it with an equal sign or with a colon equal sign. And that's the difference. And that's kind of the first step where mathematics is different from a notation on a blackboard. And let's look at an example where we define a function f of x. Let's redefine f of x to a simpler function, not just a signed function. Let me first introduce a global variable, a variable that I call ia, and I set a to 1. If I look at a is 1, and I can use that variable when I define a function. So f of x should just be x plus a. And then, for example, if you evaluate f of 5, of course, the result will be 6. And now I can undefine a. Now a has no value anymore. A is just a, as you see. And if I now evaluate f of 5, what would the result be? Remember, when we defined f up there, it was x plus a. But now a does not have a value anymore. So what is f of 5 now? Take your guess. Pardon? It's actually still 6. So what happened is when we defined the function f up there, then Mathematica evaluated the right-hand side, x plus a. A had the value 1 at that point, and that value is now saved. So the function is not x plus a, the function is x plus 1, because a was evaluated when the function f was defined. And now we can do actually do also the opposite, that is called the delayed evaluation. We can define a function g of x colon x plus a, and g of x is a plus x. If we set a to 1 and evaluate g of x, then we get 1 plus x. G of 5 is 6. And if we undefine a again, then g of 5 is 5 plus a again. So what happened in this case is that when we define the function g, then it didn't evaluate the expression. It just captured the expression x plus a, and it's evaluated every time g is evaluated. So g is actually x plus a. It's not x plus 1. And that's something that one typically doesn't distinguish on the blackboard. You wouldn't use colon equals or equals. So this can be confusing in the beginning. On the blackboard, you just write f of x equals x plus a, and then it's clear from context what that means, whether a is evaluated immediately or not immediately. And I want to argue that in terms of mathematical notation, the colon equals is the more natural syntax. And I would recommend you to use that. It is what I use by default. But if you tend to, when you use Mathematica to define many global variables such as a, b, c, and undefine and change things around, then of course this may not work. Then you may need to use the equal syntax to capture the variable, the global variables that you're using. So I don't know whether it's too early to give a general piece of advice, but let me try anyway. When I use Mathematica, I would define functions, but I would not define variables. It's fine to define a constant, see, the speed of light, for example, that doesn't change. But I would not assign variables that change during the course of a calculation. And this is a style that is different from Python or other languages. In Python, you have many local variables, and you define them and you redefine them later on. And then it can be confusing, because when you define a function, it's not clear to what value of the variable you're actually referring. So I tend to use the Mathematica style where that's not the case. You can use any style that you want. And if you're not experienced with programming in Mathematica, that may sound just very confusing, what I just said. But I wanted to make that comment anyway. Next thing I'd like to introduce is the concept of anonymous functions. We defined a function that had a name, f and g, but you can also define functions that do not have a name. And you do that with the ampersand operator. For example, let's define a function that is always 1. You write 1 ampersand, and that is a function. We can, for example, evaluate it at 4. And of course, the value is 1, because the function is always 1, no matter what argument you give to it. or you, let's define a function that multiplies by 2. That is, looks like this. This function has one argument. The argument is denoted by that gate symbol. And the result of the function is just twice that value. We can, for example, apply it to 5, and the result would be 10. Okay. Are you familiar with that syntax, with that ampersand? Some of you are. Most of you are not. Okay. Good. It is sometimes a convenient thing to use. If you're not familiar with it, don't force yourself to using it.
You want to define the coupling this way, a function of two variables?
You can do that. You use hash 1 and hash 2. Let's, for example, define a function that adds two numbers. This is hash 1 plus hash 2. Sorry. And this is how it looks. And we can apply this function to 2 and 3, my original example, and the result would then be 5. For example, you can write f1 of x and y equals x plus y. This is the function called f1 that adds two numbers, rather trivial. And if applied to 2 and 3, the result is, of course, 5. We can also define a function this way. I'm sorry, wanted to give it a different name. Then f2 is also a function that adds two numbers. It is just defined in a different syntax. The first syntax up here in 44, oh, I'm too small. I don't have, oh, no, here's a stick. This is defined using pattern matching. And this is defined using this function operator that turns an expression, takes an expression and turns it into a function. Yes, they are just the arguments of the function in that case.
So how are the two different? Is there any difference? Or
these two are different? Yes, in some circumstances they would be different. But most of the time, these F1 and F2 are equivalent. And of course, most of the time you would use the first one because that's the more natural syntax. That's also how you would write it down on a blackboard.
When does the difference?
The difference comes about if you look at the symbols F1 and F2 themselves. At the symbols themselves, how it's internally represented. So I don't want to go into that detail here. But of course, internally, you can look at how the symbols are represented. Now, actually, that's a good point. Let's look at how these things, how expressions are internally represented in Mathematica. How it represents things internally. If you have an expression a plus b plus c, then we can write it in tree a. Oh man, a window popped up. In tree form, and then you know how it looks internally, this expression a plus b plus c. If I can scroll the window. Yeah, great. Sorry, I need to reduce the magnification so that actually something is visible here. It means internally, this a plus b plus c is represented in a tree form. There's the plus, the operator, and it has three children, three arguments, a plus b plus c. And if you write a plus b plus a plus 2b plus 3c, then there's also the times operator. Times is a multiplication operator. Plus a and the result of this multiplication, the result of this multiplication. This is 2 times b, and this is 3 times c. And if you're confused about how something looks internally, how something is represented internally, then this tree form can be useful. Mathematica by default prints expressions, prints its output in a form that is a mixture between looking in the way it's traditionally written on a blackboard and internal computer science representation, and the tree form may help you understand more complex expressions. In Mathematica, you can also represent lists of values. For example, there's a list, 1, 2, 3. And in tree form, I keep misspelling things. This is a list of three numbers, 1, 2, 3. And you can also write list of numbers up to 10, 9 and 10. And of course, that gets boring. There's also a command to create a list. That is called the table command, table of I. Table creates a list. The first argument of the table is an expression that is evaluated for each element of the list. And the second defines the range. In this case, I goes up to 10, implicitly starting from 1. This gives you a list of numbers from 1 to 10. We can also output things up to 100, or we can start at 0, or we can go in steps of 3. Sorry?
So it's by default program to take I as an integer argument?
In a table, it doesn't have to be integer. If you want, we can start at 1/2, for example. So in the table, there's this variable I, and it goes from start to end in a certain step size. And by default, all variables are complex in Mathematica, actually, not real and not integer. And if you have a list of values, you can apply a function to it. That would be the map command. For example, we can take the sine of this. Sine of 1, sine of 2, sine of 3. Doesn't really make sense, right? We start at 0, and then you see that the sine of 0 is actually 0. I went through this. Okay. Now, before I wanted to get into these internal representations and the more computer science stuff, I wanted to introduce a bit more of the functionalities that Mathematica offers. Yes?
Is there a reason that you would put the backslash and at instead of just putting a list into the argument of the sine function? Or whatever function?
You mean like this?
Yeah.
Yes, this is also possible. No, not really. The difference is that this works with every function. You can map every function onto this one, whereas this syntax here works only with the special functions. For example, the sine function, most built-in functions. If you have a built-in function, sorry, if you define your own function, for example, f, and you write f of a list, 1, 2, 3, what? Okay. Now, what I did is I defined certain functions f above, and now Mathematica, of course, remembers how I defined f. And now I have to clear all. I have to undefine f so that I can use it as a generic function again. If you write it generically, f of this, then nothing happens, because Mathematica wouldn't apply f to the individual elements. And if you write it like this, then you get f applied to each of the individual elements of the list. Yes?
If you have a function of two variables, how do you map? Or is there a way to map a list over that?
You mean if you have two lists?
Yeah, if you have two lists, or maybe if you like one of that. Well, yeah, I guess you could have two lists.
Yes, so let's assume you have a function of two arguments and you want to map one of the arguments. Then you would artificially, I mean, you need to choose the other argument. So one way to do that would be, say you want to map the first argument and set the second argument to 2. Now you have a function that only has one argument. You have f, which takes 2 arguments. You keep the first one unspecified, and they set the second one to 2. And this is now the function that you can map. Does this make sense?
It does. What if I want both to be identical? Like, would I have to just pair the two lists? And then?
OK, yes. The corresponding command. So I'm now opening the help window. Let me see whether that works. Can you see the help window? Is that too small on your screen? I don't see an example for that. So what I wanted to advertise here is that Mathematica has a help system. And since the function is called map or uses this operator, the slash add, I would recommend going to the help system. And in the examples, there's often something that is explained there. So there doesn't seem to be anything like this. And I've done it before. Sometimes this command is called zip, because you take two lists and you zip it together using a function or a zip with. But I mean, different languages, it's called differently. So I don't know what's it called in Mathematica, and I don't actually quite know how to do that. So I could look at the help system and try to figure it out, but let me try not to do that. Do you know the answer, or do you have another question? OK, ask.
What's the difference between @ and /@?
OK, @ is apply, and you have a list, and then you apply something to the list. So for example, f@. Would just be a function call. So @ is something like the after operator when you say function f1 after fb after fc, the thing that is usually written like a little circle in notation. This is something like the @ symbol. There's also a little circle in it. So it's essentially just function application. So this one is exactly the same as in 67 up there. It's exactly the same one up here. And this one gets here the f's inside, not on the outside of the list here. OK. How am I doing so far? Is this mostly confusing to you? Is this halfway interesting? I'm getting some questions. But the questions are more a bit of an advanced level. So maybe I'm losing the ones of you that are not so familiar with Mathematica. OK, so this afternoon, I'll be offering a tutorial or something, probably in the room next door. And I expect that some of you will be interested in that, and others won't be interested in that. And we can do that much more interactively, probably because it's not one person speaking against all of you. And if there's a smaller group, then I can answer all the questions that you have when using Mathematica. And then we can also figure out how the map with two lists works. Or maybe you're already looking that up and can tell me the answer later. OK. This was this about the internal representation. I'd also like to talk about differential equations, differential operator. So you can take derivatives with Mathematica. The operator for that is d. The derivative of the sine of x is, of course, cosine of x. And you can, sorry about the scrolling here. Can take a second, third, and fourth derivative. And you also know the fourth derivative of a sine function is, of course, just the sine function itself. You can also integrate. And you can also calculate the definite integral, x from 0 to 2 pi is 0. Well, you expected that. I didn't mention pi before, so a small interjection. Pi is, of course, the value pi that you're all familiar with. And you can also evaluate the value pi numerically. The function to evaluate something numerically, so that is to get digits out, is called n. So you write n of pi, and you get an approximation to the value of pi. And instead of writing it like this, you can also write it like this. So this is another way to call a function. With the at operator that we had before, you write the function before the value. With the slash slash operator, you can write the function after the value. Yes?
Is there a way to put another argument at the end and specify how many digits you want?
Yes, yes. I was going to mention that now. Just increasing the screen size again. If you want pi to 10 digits, you do that. And if you want it to 1,000 digits, you do that. And mathematics is very good at these kind of calculations, so I would actually trust all these 1,000 digits. Internally, it probably uses 1,020 digits or so to make sure all the 1,000 digits are correct. And if you're adventurous, you can also calculate to 1,000,000 digits. And the slow thing about that is probably just putting the 1,000,000 digits on your screen, not the actual calculation. And you, I don't know, 10 million and so on should also work. Where was I? Yes, integration. Integrate x squared is, of course, x cubed over 3. There are several ways in which you can write down something here. I write x squared, comma 2, and the power operator is the up arrow. If you press, I don't know, it's probably Control N or Control Shift N on your computer, then you can also write it like this. So on my Mac laptop, it was Shift Command N. On your Windows laptops, it's probably Shift Control N. And then the equation looks a bit nicer. You can also input it in this way right away. If you, I think, press Control 6, then your cursor switches to superscript mode. And if you press Control, probably minus, then it switches to subscript mode. And then when you enter large expressions like this, it may look nicer in your notebook than when you input it right away. And if you go onto the menus up there, then there's format or cell, convert to, cell properties, format style. So you can also modify the way it looks on the screen.
And limits are entered by just adding like a comma and the
limits.
Limits for integration? Your integration
interval. Ah, okay. That is a good question, actually. So what I did now, I pressed Command Shift I, which is probably Control Shift I for input form, and there's N for normal form, and normal form was the one that looked so nice. Let's integrate that from 0 to 1. And let's go back to normal form. And I think these limits would be a subscript and a superscript to the integration symbol that you input there. Okay. I don't want to, of course, today describe all the exact syntax of how to integrate all these symbols because it's much too tedious to remember. And unless you actually do that a lot, you forget it, which is why I also mentioned the help pages. You can just open the help page and look at things there.
So for this specific example, if you hit escape, D-I-N-T-T, and then escape again, it gives you like a box that you can fill in for the limits of the division.
I-N-T?
Hey,
cool. Yes. Okay, very good. Thank you. Yes, and these are the boxes that you fill in. So we now go from minus 1 to plus 1, and we design function. Oops. Yes, of course, sine is symmetric. Oof. Pardon? So first you press escape, and escape lets you enter something using Latin letters, and it's going to be transformed into a symbol. For example, you press escape and then pi, and if you press escape again, you have input the uppercase pi here. And apparently it's definite with double T. I did not know that. And then you get that simple here. I believe we solved an equation earlier. Don't recall what it was. x squared plus 1 equals 0. You can also solve differential equations that would be d-solve. If of x prime equals x, f of x, x. So when you solve a differential equation, the command is d-solve. You have to give the expression f prime of x. What? No, it should be, sorry, not f of x prime. F prime. And you solve for f of x, and the independent variable is x. And then the result will, of course, be, OK, that's too easy, 1 half x squared plus some kind of integration constant. You can also write this differently. You solve not for f of x, but f. And then the result is not that f of x looks like this, but rather f is a function that takes one argument that is called x, and this is the value of the function. And actually, this syntax here with function of something is equivalent to the ampersand syntax that I introduced earlier, except ampersand is a shorter syntax. Instead of ampersand at the end, you can also write function of something. If you have an expression that is x plus 1, x minus 1, you can simplify it. I believe we had that before. We can expand that. Yeah, that doesn't expand. Yeah. If you have an expression such as x plus y, x minus y, collector. I'm not good in using examples here. With collect, you have a large complicated expressions, and you think collect powers of one variable. And I hope I'm not getting it wrong. Does this make sense? Yes, exactly. This is, so what I'm doing here is I'm doing something interactively. I'm not showing you slides. And that's, of course, more dangerous because that means I make mistakes. That means you don't think of me as a perfect teacher. But on the other hand, maybe you're learning a bit more by asking these kinds of questions. Thank you. So I'm going to look at the documentations of collect. Okay. Okay, no, that is apparently what it outputs. I have no idea why it does that. Very strange. I used the correct syntax for collect. You have an expression and then a variable, and then it collects the various powers in that variable. There's another function, expand, that may be useful, where you expand everything into a variable. You kind of try to remove parentheses and get an explicit set of powers out there. Why it didn't have the x cubed first? I have no idea. Yes, so this just should expand everything and then in powers of x. And I would have it expected that first all the x cubed terms, then the x squared terms, but the order here is strangely wrong. Then the terms linear in x, and then the terms without x, and then presumably terms in 1 over x on the right-hand side. But there are no such terms present. What do you mean with factoring functions?
Exactly. If you had an expanded average, you wanted to find the
tries to combine it again, yes. The general problem here is that if you have a simple polynomial or something, then it's clear what to do. But with more complicated expressions, it's not always clear how to do that. There's not always a unique form of doing that, in particular if there are other functions or sine functions and other things as well. And you may expand the sine in terms of an exponential function or go forth and back. And therefore, this simplify and expand and collect, these functions, they cannot always work the way you expect it to, because there was always some identity that Mathematica may not be aware of, or where Mathematica makes a different choice than you would have naively expected. And that means that when you call simplify or so, the result may not actually be the most simple result. This is just a guess that Mathematica gives. It's actually a hard and unsolvable computer science problem to fully simplify an expression, because it's not clear of which form of an expression is actually the most simple form. There's no clear-cut definition for that.
If you wanted to factor 1 plus x squared, would it give you x plus I and x minus I?
You mean like this? Yes, it would.
But so you said by default it assumes your.
Oh, complex numbers.
Complex numbers.
Yes.
Would it give you one plus I x plus I x minus?
No, it doesn't. And what Mathematica may be doing here, that it decides that all the coefficients of these expressions are real, so it doesn't expand it out into complex numbers.
Okay, can you force it to do that?
I have no idea. I'm just looking at the documentation. Yeah, adding I or something is something that one could do. There's an extension. Have you used extension before?
Yeah, that works. I extend it specifically to I.
I? Okay, good.
You just type an extension.
Yes. So what I typed in is question mark factor, and then popped up the help text for factor. And you just skim over the help text, and then you see there's this additional argument extension. So that's the syntax that Mathematica often uses, where you have some keyword and then a right arrow. You type that as minus, and then it's larger than, and then some value for that. And apparently the syntax here is extension I, and then it actually factors into terms that look like this. Which means I got lucky, my guess, that it didn't do that because there were no complex numbers already in the coefficients, but it seems to have been correct in this case.
Okay. I think with respect to the collect and expand, there is a way that Mathematica like, organizes the terms, right? Like,
yes.
Raising power. Is there something to care about? I mean, if I'm programming something and...
No, there's not. And you see that when you write, for example, x cubed plus x squared plus 1. If you write it like this, then you see internally the order doesn't matter, because internally there's just one add operator that has multiple arguments. It looks as if you had two plus signs, but internally there's only one plus sign. Well, I mean, it's internal, right? It's not actually a sign. And that plus sign has three arguments. So internally, there is one function plus that takes three arguments. And there are one and these two different powers. And of course, you know that the plus sign, the order of the arguments to plus sign doesn't matter. So internally, you do not have to worry about that order. And I'm going to talk about pattern matching and replacements later on. And there, actually, Mathematica has built in rules about the plus sign, the plus function, that also make sure that it, that these patterns match, even if you give them in the wrong order. Okay. Yeah, what I sometimes miss in Mathematica is that I just want to point to one sub-expression of something and say, simplify this sub-expression. And that may be a bit difficult, that you may have to do some surgery there, that you take a sub-expression and then you explicitly take it apart. You take the list apart, then you simplify something and put it back together again. That is a bit complicated. Oh, there was one thing I didn't show you about lists. If you have a list, 1, 2, 3, let's give it a name. Let's call it L. And then you can access the third element of the list with this strange syntax where you have two double brackets. So one bracket was function calls, and two double brackets is the index operator for lists, which is 3. Yeah, boring, because the third element is 3. So let's make the list a bit longer. And now the third element is, of course, 2. And if you look at the fifth element, that would be an error message. And the zeroth element is list. And that is clear. If you look at the list in tree form, these are the elements 1, 2, 3, and 4 of the list. And this is kind of the zeroth element. This is actually how it's represented internally. So if you have an expression, then the zeroth element reduces these operators kind of what is called the head of the expression, which in this case is list, so it would be the plus operator. Okay, now let's talk about something else after these dry things, a bit more fun things. Now let's call it plots. You can, of course, create plots, graphs in Mathematica. The simple one that we always use in the first case is we can plot the sine function, x from 0 to 2 pi. And it looks like this. The syntax is similar to the integration syntax. First, you have the expression with one variable, say x, and then x goes from 0 to 2 pi. And you also notice that Mathematica automatically chose the range from -1 to +1 according to the function that is plotted here. And this is a graphical user interface, so you can click on the plot, and then you can make it a bit larger if you want. You can press Control. You get a context menu to cut and copy and paste the graph. You can choose a black frame for the plot if you want. So I notice you can't see this. This is a bit of a context menu that allows you to manipulate the plot. You can change the size. You can change the background to cornflower blue. Why not? And there are more options that you can do, drawing tools, rasterize, and so on. And the plot function, if you look at the documentation of the plot function, has about 1 million different options that you can choose to modify the plot in ways that you would want. You can choose to change the axis, this and that and everything. The plot, as I did it here, is kind of the basic plot. It's kind of nice. But if you want to use the plot in a publication, then it's often necessary to modify it in some way to make sure that the axis actually is nice, that there's a legend there, and so on and so forth. You can, of course, also plot several functions at once. For that, you give a list, say sine of x and cosine of x. Then you get both. Maybe you want to go to 2 pi instead. There's a plot 3D, sine x times cosine y, x goes from 0 to pi, and y goes from 0 to pi. What's wrong now? There. And that is something that you can also rotate. And there are even more options to look at that plot. If you have a list of values, you remember earlier that function primes of 10 was the 10th prime number? We can use a table. Primes of I goes to 20. This is the list of the first 20 prime numbers. What? It's called prime. Why didn't you correct me? And we can plot that. If we say list plot, that plots the elements of a list. And then it looks approximately like this.
Can you approximate these with, can you do some sort of...
You mean a linear regression or some kind
yes.
of fit? Okay. Yes, you can do that. That's, of course, independent of the plotting package. So there's probably a function called linear regression or so that you could use. And the input is a list of values, and the output is a function. Linear model fit seems to be a function that exists.
There, your table, you're assuming I begins at 0, right?
No. In Mathematica, values, indexes typically begin at 1. So I20, that is exactly the same if I write I, 1, 20. Gives you the same result. Or 2,000 primes, looks like that. Seems to be a nice plot here. We can also, Oh, I recall. I'm sorry that I'm jumping forth and back, but you're asking questions and so on makes me move a bit. I wanted to give another example between the equals and the colon equals. Remember that I mentioned that in the morning, in the beginning, this was one of the first issues where Mathematica is actually different from what you do on a blackboard. Have you heard about the Fibonacci function? Fibonacci function is a recursive function. Let's just define it. Fibonacci of 0 is 0. Fibonacci of 1 is 1. And Fibonacci of n, that is now a pattern, is Fibonacci of n minus 1 plus Fibonacci of n minus 2. What happens if I press enter? You get an error. The problem is, again, if you write an equal sign, then the right-hand side is evaluated immediately. I define Fibonacci. The right-hand side is evaluated. This contains Fibonacci. So it takes the definition, plugs it in there. Of course, that contains another Fibonacci, and so on and so forth. So this kind of recursive definition, you can't evaluate it immediately. So we need to use delayed evaluation here. And then everything works fine. And then we can output, for example, Fibonacci of 10. 55, Fibonacci of 20, Fibonacci is 30. Oops, that begins to take a bit of a long time. Yeah, because I mean, it's actually expensive to evaluate that function if you just go through it manually. And if you evaluate Fibonacci of 100 or something, then that probably won't be possible. It takes too long. We can now create a table with Fibonacci numbers, Fib of I, 20. And we can plot that. And every time you see a plot like this, where values are 0, 0, 0, and then they shoot up, that of course tells you you want to use a log plot. So that exists as well, list log plot. And that looks beautiful, kind of the definition of an exponential function. So I'm not going to do a regression here, but the Fibonacci numbers actually grow exponentially in the limit for large n. There are many different plot functions. I showed you plot and list plot and list log plot and plot 3D. So of course, there's also log log plot and so on and so forth. There might be 10 or different, 20 different plot functions with different logs and 3Ds and 2Ds and so on. Yes? Yes. Yes.
Which is that after the colon equals, you put a pattern and then another equal sign, and it will assign the variables after each computation, so that when it tries to recompute the function, it uses the existing.
Okay. Actually, why don't we do that here, since this is interactive? I was going to show a bit of programming later, but do you want to tell people how this works?
You just type fib, square brackets, n without the underscore, and then another equal sign.
Okay. So this may look a bit strange. It looks as if you defined a function twice. But the big difference is here that here you have a pattern. And here this is not a pattern. So if the right-hand side here is evaluated for a certain value, say for n equals 10, then you're not defining fib n, but rather you're defining Fibonacci of 10. And the same way, as Fibonacci in zero, Fibonacci were defined explicitly up here. This is exactly such a definition that is added there again. And internally, Mathematica then has the big table where it can look up Fibonacci 0, 1, 2, and so on. And if it finds a definite a definition that is not a pattern, it will prefer that. So if you write... Pardon? No, because it's done recursively. The first thing that would be calculated is Fibonacci of 2, and that is calculated once and then it's stored. And for example, Fibonacci 10 requires Fibonacci 9 and Fibonacci 8. Fibonacci 9 requires 8 and 7. So you see 8 appears twice there, but it's only calculated once and then stored. The storing takes a bit of time, but it's much, much faster than doing that exponential recursing all the time. So you see now this is actually much faster. And if we are true, we can now calculate that. Close. Yeah, but 300 works. And yeah, there's another feature of Mathematica that I want to show off. You can have integers of arbitrary size. So that's actually the exact result. That's not an approximation. If you use a language such as Fortran or Java, then, well, no, in Java it actually exists, but in Fortran, it's very difficult to have very large exact integers, whereas in Mathematica, that works naturally out of the box. Okay, sorry, I was interrupting a question.
So if you define Fibonacci of 0, Fibonacci of 10, and then you want to find Fibonacci of 20, it won't start again from 0 and go all the way to 20, it would instead start from 10 and go all the way.
Okay. So what... Yes. So what now, where are we? Here. This here. So here we defined two Fibonaccis explicitly. And here we wrote a function that defines these Fibonaccis. So after evaluating Fibonacci of 300, it evaluated this for 300 and for all the others below. So this is now as if I had manually typed Fibonacci 0 equals, Fibonacci 1 equals, Fibonacci 2 equals, 3 equals, 4 equals, up until 300 equals. So internally now, Mathematica has a large list of 300 definitions, Fibonacci of n equals, but for particular values of n, that are all stored. And it will remember that until I delete the definition of Fibonacci. So if I do that a million times, of course, then Mathematica may run out of memory because it actually remembered all these million definitions. Yes?
Is there an option to know how much time is the computer spending in performing a calculation? Or...
Yes, there is. So if you add the function called timing around something, then it evaluates the expression and results a list of two elements. The first is the time in seconds. The second element is the actual result. And the result, in this case, it took half a millisecond to evaluate that. Because I mean, even though Mathematica has to store these things internally, it's actually quite fast. So if you want to have something that takes a long time, I recommend some complicated integral calculation or some complicated numerical evaluation. Yep. And now it's about 100 times faster, because right now Fib 400 was already defined, and all the Fibonacci's from 300 to 400 didn't need to be calculated. So this is about 100 times faster than that. And the result is the same, which is also good.
So there's no way to know before doing the calculation how long does it run? Is it going to take, right?
No, there's no way to do that.
There's conditional timing statements. You can say run this expression for up to this amount of time, and if it's not done after this amount of time, then stop. Or you can just abort the command.
There are commands to abort and interrupt the calculation. Okay, so I see that some of you already know Mathematica quite well, and this is good because you're all in the room over there, and I hope that you begin to talk to each other, and then you kind of exchange the knowledge between yourselves. In particular, some of you do not know Mathematica yet. I believe it's an incredibly useful tool, and you should really try to get to use it. And if you're unfamiliar with it, then maybe you can learn something. And what I want to do here is not teach you Mathematica, but kind of teach you how to teach yourself Don Mathematica.
So, going further with the timing thing, if you wanted to compute a sequence of numbers, could you possibly like set a time limit of sorts, like do a computation or compute the elements of a sequence for 10 minutes and then abort, and then give me the list that you acquired?
Yes. Yes, yes, that is possible. Yes. Okay. I don't recall the actual command to do that, but we can figure it out this afternoon. Okay. So I showed you many things about Mathematica. I wanted to show you a bit more. In particular, I also wanted to show you linear algebra matrices and vectors, inverting matrices, and so on. I didn't get to do that, but I can show you some of these this afternoon. And I also wanted to show you a bit something about programming, how you introduce local variables. A module, for example. Actually, I think this is quite important because many people don't know that, and that means that their Mathematica programs look a bit different. So before we go to question and answer, let me just give you this one more example how to do something. Let's assume we define a complicated function. That depends on two arguments. And we want to use some intermediate quantities to evaluate that. Then we can use that via a module.
There's something called a complicated one?
I'm defining it. I'm defining. Okay, let's just call it FF, right? Because it's a big function, has two letters in the name. And in this module, I'm going to introduce two intermediate variables. So A and B are variables, but they only live inside this, what is called a module, and they're not globally visible. And this module, I say define A to x squared, semicolon, B is whatever, 1 over y, and the actual result is then A squared plus B squared. Does this make sense? Is this readable? What happened here? A squared plus B squared. Well, there we go. And well, in this case, it may not actually make sense, but you can see that sometimes you have these temporary quantities that you want to evaluate and just need them for an expression. If you write it in a blackboard, you would often say where something equals something with variables A and B, and then you say where A equals and B equals. And you can do this with a module. And A and B, you also see the nice syntax coloring that everything is black, but the patterns are green. And in the module, the A's and B's are also green. And if I write A and B outside the module here, then it remains blue. A has no value. And if I evaluate FF of 1 or 2, then I get the result. And if I look at A, it has no value because it has its value only inside the module. And that means you can, in a module, safely introduce new variables and they don't clash with anything that you use anywhere else in a function. So this is a convenient way to encapsulate information, to ensure you're not running out of variables when you're defining something in one way that suddenly has a value in a different place. Okay, so this is software engineering. This is large-scale programming, how to deal with complexity and make sure that you can look at different parts of a Mathematica program in isolation and not have to understand everything together. Okay. Do you have questions about what I introduced today in terms of Mathematica? I want to point to many tutorials that Mathematica has. If you go to the help functions, you have tutorial about the initial syntax, the strange uppercase function names and the square brackets, the tutorial about lists, about functional programming, about solving, about variables, differential equations, integrals, plotting, and so on. And that can all be very useful. And if you're unfamiliar with Mathematica, I would recommend just taking one particular aspect and going through one of the tutorials if you have the time. Yes?
I just had a more general question. I know Mathematica is a standard in physics, but what's the main difference between that and MATLAB?
There are actually several programs that all start with MA to make things complicated. There's Mathematica, there's Maple, there's MATLAB, and there's Magma, and there are probably a few ones as well. So Mathematica and Maple, not MATLAB, are very similar. The syntax is slightly different, but apart from that, they're basically interchangeable. It just so happens at perimeter, basically, everybody uses Mathematica, which is why I introduced that and not Maple, Maple originated at the University of Waterloo, just 10 minutes from here. But still, I mean, these days, I think Mathematica won the race and Maple didn't win the race. So it's just that two identical things, and just one of the software survives. Now, according to MATLAB, Mathematica is mostly about symbolic manipulation. That is, you have these that simplify and they expand and they dissolve and so on. And MATLAB has a package for symbolic manipulation, but that is mostly about numerical calculations. So you have an airplane wing, and you know where how the shape of the wing looks like and the tensile strength of the material, and then you want to calculate the eigenfrequency. And you have a 1,000 control points or a million control points. And that can be done very efficiently with MATLAB, and there are many other tools to do that. And that is, in principle, also possible with Mathematica, but it's probably easier to do in MATLAB. And the symbolic calculation is the strength of Mathematica. So in engineering, it would probably be MATLAB and the theoretical physics, Mathematica. But this is way oversimplified in the statement.
Can you do sort of low-level programming in Mathematica?
Yes. Whatever you mean, yes, it's possible.
I mean,
so
I
using these... Yeah. So what you have?
Low level in terms of trivial programming. I meant low level.
Yes. Yes. No. No. That's possible. Whatever you can do in C, you can do in Mathematica as well. You can define functions. You probably would use the equal sign, not the colon equal signs. And you can use modules and so on. The print statements. You can open and close files. You can access the webcam and so on and so forth. I'm going to bring some examples. So I'll show some examples for that tomorrow. How to do that. And if you're interested in that kind of thing, I also can show you kind of how a low-level program would look like. In C++, yes and no. It looks different, of course, because the syntax is different. So even C++ and Java differ in their object-oriented programming. But this is possible. The major difference is that in C++, it's a type-safe language. Whenever you use a variable, you have to define the type. And in Mathematica, the type of a variable can change over time. You can even undefine variables. That makes it a bit slower and also a bit more powerful. So the programs would probably be different. And do you know the standard template library in C++?
Standard
template library, the vectors and maps and so on. And in Mathematica, you have lists and all these functions like set trees here. So it's all possible, although it would look slightly different. If you have a particular example in mind, something that you would do, we can do that.
It would be impossible, but
there'd
be no sane reason to do it.
Yeah.
So here's.
It's more interesting to have a complicated language.
Yeah. So let's, for example, good. Wait here. Low-level programming. So, for example, counting from 1 to 10. Right? That is one of the first things that you do in any language. In Mathematica, I already showed you how to do that. It's table i, 10. Count from 1 to 10. You can also do it in low-level programming. And I really recommend to you, use the table. Don't use what I'm going to show you now. But full disclosure, I'm going to show it to you anyway. There's a do command that does something in a particular order. The table just gives you the result. The order in which the elements are calculated doesn't matter. But you can do that. You can print i and print i outputs the value of i, and it does it 10 times. And here with the table, you get all the result at once, and you can look at all the results individually. And what this one does, it goes to i from 1 to 10 in order from 1 to 10. Table doesn't specify the order, and it outputs them, and then you have the numbers here on the screen. But I mean, you can't do anything with them, right? Because here you get a result, which is the list. You can assign it to a variable. You can say numbers equals, and then you look at the numbers, and then you got them. And if you assign the result of a do statement to something, and then look at that thing, there's nothing in it. It's empty, because it just printed something to the screen. There's no result of a do calculation. The result is empty. Okay, but that was again me being fancy. Sorry to those of you who thought that would be actually an introduction to Mathematica. Okay. If there are no questions anymore, then I think I'll be there in the, what's that room called? Side room? In the side room at probably 2:30 in the afternoon. Do I get the time right? From 2 to 3:30 or something? Yes. And I hope it's a bit more informal, and then we can just go through some of the things from Mathematica and look at some of the more detailed questions that you had, and maybe also give another introduction to the to those of you who are new to Mathematica, because I want those to get a good head start, because it should be useful later on. Thank you, and see you later.